sit for about 25, 30 minutes. If you'd like to continue with the metta, if it's going well and you feel like something good is happening, keep going with the metta. If you want to sit and enjoy just sitting and breathing, that's fine. Otherwise, I want to encourage you to just be with whatever is from moment to moment. What's called choiceless awareness or free attention. We're not choosing the object. We're sitting and being receptive, receiving things as they are, as they occur. The main thing is to be present, to be here. I want to read to you a little bit about magnanimous heart. The path of liberation is an invitation to find out whether we are condemned to a life in which experiences of loss define existence. No one is exempt from loss, and yet being diminished by loss is not inevitable. We can move and shift and change and transform, understand our experiences of loss. Through embodying the practice, we allow the picture as we initially see it to get bigger. In so doing, we see that we have never really owned anything at all, and thus cannot lose what we never really had. Our practice is to recognize and engage with the reality of our lives, to find a way through loss to peace and inner wholeness. We make of our lives a path of understanding. All experiences in our lives are the very practice itself. And it is essential to place our attention on the very experiences that we would rather leave out. Encountering loss from the perspective of the Dharma and from the perspective of the practice clarifies the path. Clarifying the path means that the path becomes more visible. If we are oriented in a direction of inner freedom, each encounter, each experience brings us more and more inner freedom. As we learn to release and allow, we also learn to trust and encourage the process of relinquishment. This approach takes us beyond survival, though simply surviving in the immediacy of overwhelming loss maybe all that is possible in some moments. On the most basic level, our task is to endure until life has a chance to teach us what we need to know. And what we need to know is the kind of safety and trust that lies within and is beyond conditions. We need to let life teach us and guide us lovingly into this terrain of loss and transformation. What we need to know within our bones is that we cannot really cling to anything because clinging won't make it stay. In the experience of a loss, what we have mistakenly overly depended upon becomes extremely clear. It becomes so highlighted in consciousness that we sideline and cast aside other aspects of life that we also value. Sometimes until we lose what we've mistakenly over-depended upon, we don't know the extent of our dependence. After all, what could be more human than depending on that which is dear and beloved? At the same time, nothing external, nothing conditioned can ultimately sustain us. The Buddha's invitation is to discover that which doesn't change. Remaining conscious, staying awake, in the midst of both the beautiful and the painful, offers an entree point into the changeless. The changeless is what the Buddha also referred to as the deathless, the unborn, the unconditioned, or the timeless. Turning to Master Shangyan, no matter how great a loss is, if you fully accept it straight on, that loss will turn out to be a gain. In our growing capacity to embrace loss, we come to recognize that loss strengthens our inner resources. Compassion comes forth to meet loss, and because of coming forth, compassion is strengthened. Courage and love are called forth to meet what is happening. Beautiful qualities of heart meet the hole in the heart that is aching. In this way, love is strengthened, patience is strengthened, and courage is strengthened. Etty Hillison wrote the following in reference to her fellow prisoners in Auschwitz. She said, "Most people here are much worse off than they need be because they write off their longing for friends and family as so many losses in their lives, when they might count the fact that their heart is able to long so hard and to love so much among their greatest blessings." In the buoyancy of magnanimous heart, we recognize that everything that occurs is an expression of life. This perspective allows us to stop assessing, measuring, and comparing. We neither add nor subtract from the present moment experience. If we are not fixated on or stuck in concepts of better and worse, we find that our capacity to respond with greater wisdom and compassion kicks in naturally. We find creative ways and options to meet the way things are. We allow creativity to flow forth. In the simplicity of present moment attentiveness, thoughts arise, but we don't feed those thoughts by adding a thought to the thought that is arising. In returning again and again to the simplicity of being, seeing, breathing, sensing, feeling, and just experiencing, we experience a fundamental interconnectedness. We know this interconnectedness because of allowing the bare experiences of life itself to take precedence over concepts and descriptions of life. This shift is the movement from my life to life itself. Life itself is just what it is. It is not a problem. Life may be extremely painful at times, but this is the nature of life, to be both pleasant and painful. It is when we think of life as mine that life is problematic. There is loss, there is great loss in this life, yet magnanimous heart holds all experiences, including loss, with immeasurable spaciousness. In the recognition of magnanimous heart, we recognize our fundamental goodness. Our engagement and participation in the world begin to shift from viewing this world as a field of consumption to experiencing this world as a field of appreciation. And we can't help but bow down in gratitude. Just sitting, just breathing, just thinking, just feeling, just sensing, just seeing, just hearing, just smelling, just tasting, just knowing. Just. is last 5 minutes in the sitting, moment to moment, fresh, awake, now. Whatever arises, that's your practice. May all beings have ease of mind. May all beings have comfort of heart. May all beings live embraced by kindness. So I just want to open it up and hear from you, and we can continue certainly on from this morning as well around the five contemplations. But I just wanted to perhaps review a little bit about the day today, that we began with a sitting that was meant to steady and ground and harmonize. And this is such an important aspect of the practice, is to steady ourselves, to collect, you know, all of the different diverse energies. Really understanding the place of collectedness, that it's our foundation, and it's a wonderful thing in and of itself. So the first sitting was just, you know, just to show up, to be present, to encourage calm and to delight in calm. And walking practice, you know, just the simplicity of walking. And then the guided recollections, a guided meditation on the five recollections. And then this afternoon, metta practice towards yourself, towards your loved ones, towards your dear ones, with the encouragement just you know, kind of discern between loving kindness and attachment. No small task. And yet, what are our alternatives given that attachment never works and always brings suffering? So this look at love and attachment and encouraging more love and encouraging letting go and releasing. And during some of the walkings, talking about releasing what was not necessary, you know, letting go or releasing self-consciousness and pressure and a sense of urgency and all of that. And then this last sitting was just to be with things as they are, you know, encouragement of buoyancy, what magnanimous heart, as Dogen called it, but buoyancy and spaciousness and measurelessness and room for everything, room for all experiences with a sense of steadiness and groundedness within that. So choiceless awareness, free attentiveness. And I was speaking this morning about bringing the different strands of the practice together, that to just sit is not enough. And sitting, by the way, is a stand-in for sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, you know, because it's the formal practices that we engage in. And sitting is just shorthand for the formal postures of sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. And sometimes I give retreats in Cambridge called evening out the postures. And we move from sitting, standing, walking to lying down all day long so that we're not preferencing a particular posture over another posture. I mean, just because the Buddha is, you know, lots of times he's sitting, he definitely lay down. And we actually, in Cambridge, we have a reclining Buddha room where there's a statue of the Buddha laying down because of the of wanting to inspire people. It's not easy to lay down, you know? Oftentimes we fall asleep right away when we lay down. And so to keep be able to keep oneself awake, it's really, you know, it's big practice to do that. And yet, of course, we need to be awake and aware when we're lying down. Even when we're going off to sleep, we can be awake until we're not. And, you know, when we're sick, we have to lie down. You know, maybe when we're close to death, we have to lie down. I don't know. People in my life have instructions to prop me up. You have to give people instructions like that. Put me in the, because I just, you know, it's such a natural posture after all these years to be in. But, you know, who knows if that'll happen. We have to practice in whatever posture we're in. So evening out the posture, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. And then listening to the Dharma all day long. You know, listening to the Dharma today. Listening to what I've been offering, but hopefully listening to your own heart throughout the day. You know, having the space to listen to your own heart and to hear your own intrinsic wisdom. And then seeing if you could be awake and aware, whatever it is that you were up to during the day today, having tea or using the bathroom or whatever it might be, you know, moment to moment. Because we talk about daily life, but this is daily life. Wherever we are is our daily life. When we're on retreat, it's our daily life. What else could it be? Our other life? You know, it's always our daily life. Yeah. So anyway, trying to see if we could stay awake all day. All right, so that's really all I wanted to say to kind of start us off. Anything on your mind or anything you want to discuss, anything you want to ask about? Yeah, sure.
So the five recollections practice,
Say again?
The five recalling practice.
The five recollections, five recall. Yeah.
Is it something you say once you practice?
Yeah. I have a little joke in my book, which is about putting them up on your refrigerator, and that the Buddha would have recommended this if there were refrigerators during the Buddha's time, refrigerator sutta, you know, because it's so convenient. You know, you're always going into the refrigerator, so there they are. Yeah? And it's quite nice. You know, it's quite nice to write them out and then have them someplace in your line of vision. For most people, it is a good idea to do them every day. If you're, I don't know, like severely depressed, or you just feel like can't go near this yet, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, encourage. Practice has to do with encouraging an initial degree of happiness to use to look at our unhappiness. You know, we develop an initial level of peacefulness, and then with that initial level of peacefulness, we can look at what's truly not peaceful within us. Yeah. So it's not across the board. Everybody should do this every day. But it is a great practice. One way to do it, and to do it every day, is to, if you're drawn to it, is to do it before you go to sleep at night. You know, so you're lying down doing nothing, you know, nothing to do. And so might as well practice. And if you bring these recollections in at that point, it's quite a good time to do it because you're surrendered. You know, you're already lying down. And then to bring them in and hopefully have enough energy to be aware of the reactions. Because if you don't, you're just going to go down, down, down. You know, but if you can be aware of the reactions, if there is enough energy to do that, it's quite a fruitful time to practice. Or you could do it when you wake up in the morning, you know, before your formal sitting, you could do it. Yeah. Or you could start your sitting off with this particular practice. Yeah. Yeah. You know, all these things, it's like you do it for a certain amount of time and then you let it go. And then something jogs your memory, you do it for a certain amount of time and then you let it go. It's that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. But you learn a lot. One learns a lot through these recollections. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm offering if you want to come to Cambridge, I'm offering a 5-day on this subject at the end of April. Yeah. Anybody? Yes. Yeah. Right. Right. Oh, I'm glad you heard that. Yeah. I definitely can. I have noticed with practitioners that, and I did it myself at a certain point too, that you can use metta as a shield, you know? It's not as a way to hold experiences and be friendly towards experiences. It's more like, you know, a shield against experiences. And it's not metta when you do that. You know, you're kind of like pumping out the phrases, but you're really trying to simply protect yourself in that at that time. And of course, metta is protective, but when it's defensive protective, it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, you know, because metta is opening, and using it as a defense is closing. And you can feel it when you're doing it, but you can feel it, but it is subtle, which is why I pointed out, because it's really aversion is behind it. You know, the subtext, which we always have to be bring interest to, is the not wanting to experience it. You know, so you're using metta so you don't have to experience what you don't want to experience. And there's a hardness to it instead of a gentleness and an openness to it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a good thing. It can be feel quite subtle, but it's good to be on top of this one too. You know, if it caught you, anything that catches you like that, that's where the intrigue comes in. It's one of my favorite words these days, intrigue. You know, I feel like the whole practice, it's like a, you know, it's like a detective story. We're discovering this secret treasure, and we've got to, like, you know, we have to find our way there. We have to access it. And there's a certain degree of intrigue involved. And the intrigue really, really helps a lot. You know, I mean, the kind of like really? Or curiosity or real interest, or how could I have landed up here, you know, or whatever it might be. There's a certain kind of thread that we can follow, and it's whatever our interest is. So if that caught you, then see how that evolves, you know. See what happens when you look for it, because it probably caught you because there's something going on that is worth your attention and your investigation. Yeah, 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 yes. Yeah. Like everything was irritating, or?
Yeah. But mostly I was irritated just internally, so. Mm. Not, and as I'm reporting it to you, I'm not troubled by it, I'm curious.
Yeah, I see.
Very curious.
Yeah, yeah. I see. Metta can be so irritating, though. Oh, my God. Uh-huh. In your other times of practicing it, huh? Oh, well, you have to at some point, you know. I mean, you don't avoid anything on this path. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you've never experienced irritability when practicing metta, today's the day. Yeah, we experience everything at a certain point. It's, and we're always, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but generally just the way the mind works is this is good, this is bad, yeah, this means I'm getting somewhere, this means I'm failing, and I'm not getting anywhere after I've done this, and this, and then you pile it on, and, you know, and it's just a feeling. Okay. Yeah, which is really interesting, because how can you walk wrong, you know? It's hard to do that. I did have somebody in Cambridge, we have these ledges in the lower walking hall or meditation hall, and I had someone in a beginner's class jump up on the ledge and walk a few, you know, really mindfully, right? And then jump down and make huge sound, and then jump up, and then jump down. And the next time I had to say, please, no leaping, you know, as part of the instructions. I couldn't say it then because I knew it would be too much and, you know, beyond irritating for the person I was saying it to. And everybody else would start judging. So I couldn't say it in the moment, but I was really amused by those instructions for the next few times of that group. But anyway, that's a real exception. That was a digression. It's really hard to walk wrong. So it's so interesting. You know how to walk. You've been walking for your whole life, you know, since you were a little kid, and you've learned how to walk. And now all of a sudden, you're doing it, quote, wrong, right? That's meditation. I mean, now, you know, seeing that that entered in and something started to pick up steam, and then I became a bad yogi. You know, I can't do this kind of thing. And it was the story began to enter in about who you, in that moment, thought you were.
Who would have thought meditation would be so amusing?
Yeah. We laugh or we cry, you know, one of the two. Yeah. It is deeply amusing. Yeah. People used to talk about, you know, the word dukkha and turn it into duking it out. I'm duking it out. Yeah. Hey, did I see a hand over here? Yes.
The defensiveness of
metta. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. I've had that experience of really limiting my loved ones and benefactors in some ways that I didn't realize that, and I think it did have to do with that aversion in real subtle ways, like things that parts of them that I was aversive to in some ways, and I didn't fully appreciate them as I did today.
Really
open to it in a way that I hadn't been. And
Yes, that's beautiful. Because when we first open up to benefactors and, you know, all of this, there's always something wrong. You know, so they're my benefactor, but not quite. You know, little tweak here or there. Or, you know, even something like they have to live forever or they have to live longer than me or whatever. You know, it's absurd kinds of things that just doesn't even work that way. But this kind of resentment that our benefactor should be always benefiting us. Now, our benefactors are always benefiting us, but by living their own life, You know, they're benefiting us. Just by existing, they're benefiting us. So we enlarge the definition of this category of benefactor. Yeah, and the bigger it gets, the better it is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, eventually, you know, it really expands into even the people that we're having difficulty with. But you can't push that. Otherwise, it's false to push it, right? It has to happen kind of on its own and in a surprising way, an unexpected, you know, rather than somebody telling you to do it. I don't believe in that. Yeah, I think it's pasting something on top, and it can't be authentic. It isn't authentic, yeah. Yeah. Oh. Right, right, right. See, that's a key too, because when we practice metta, it can, you know, until it doesn't, it can feel very mechanical. And where's the life to it? And I'm just repeating these, you know, these positive phrases, and I'm really upset, and yet, you know, may I be happy? You know. Yeah, and it all feels like not authentic. But if we are aware of what's happening in the moment, so we're not trying to push anything away or oppress or defend ourselves, then metta is accompanying rather than trying to get rid of or blot out. Yeah. It's more of a sense of being accompanied, you know, like me accompanying myself, me accompanying you. Right, it's a companionship. It's companioning oneself and others. Yeah, yeah. So the lack of it being mechanical, something came to life. Yeah. If I were you, I would go with this one. Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know what your daily life practice is, but I would definitely start bringing some metta practice in. You know, not just spirit of metta, but practice of metta. Yeah. Because when something comes alive like this, you really want to go with it. Yeah. You don't want to have it just be, oh, an experience that happened on an afternoon of retreat and, you know, maybe it'll happen again and all of this. You really want to follow the thread of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, right, 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 yes. Yes, that we have not seen that are out of our life or that kind of thing. And yet, of course, you know, benefactor. Yeah, yeah, great, great. Who else, anybody? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, uh-huh, right. It almost sounds so bad, you know. What a wonderful day on retreat, no.
It was this wonderful feeling afterwards. It was like this expansiveness was that, yeah. Oh, if that's going to happen, I can let go now.
Yes.
Because it's going to happen eventually.
Exactly, exactly. Right, right, right. And you can't keep hold of it, but an understanding like that does its own work. Yeah. You know, you can have trust and confidence. You can't keep hold of it because then you're just clinging again. Yeah. It's not going to ever work. Even about the Dharma, it doesn't work to grasp or to cling. But it does have its impact. You know, the recognition, even for a flash, that I can let go now, because why not? You know, anything later is always a fantasy. You know, it's just the mind fantasizing about the spiritual journey. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good, good, good. Did anybody get super depressed and unhappy and we need to talk later? Individually, one-on-one? Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it happens. And I don't like anybody to go home in a kind of a very heavy-hearted kind of way. Yeah, because that's not what this is about. It's about being lighter, weightless, porous, transparent, Light as a feather, not heavy-hearted. And yet, when you do this, of course, there is going to be some heaviness. But you have to keep working with it until that lightens up. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, if you don't feel anything like that, then I don't know. It's just part of the practice. It's part of this to open to whatever the strong afflictive emotions might be. Yeah.
Defensive metta?
It's so interesting. It's just being in Seattle, you know, because I don't mean that you guys are more defensive than in Cambridge, but I've just been talking about this for so long in Cambridge, you know, so nobody asks me about it anymore because, you know, and I just haven't talked about it out here much. Yeah. So what were you thinking, though? Where was your mind going? Right. It's more mechanical.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Right. When it's like that, it's kind of like you're throwing a strategy out. You know, and I don't ever think that's a good idea. Like, as we practice more and more, we have more, you could say, tools in our toolbox. You know, we have more skillful means. We have more ways to approach things. We have more options available to us. But when we're in a crunch, you know, when we're in a crunch and we're throwing dharma at that crunch, you know, it's not real dharma. The subtext is, I don't want to feel it. Right. And generally, the best approach is to feel it and to hold it with compassion, you know, to hold it gently until it changes on its own, but to be really patient. Because when you don't want to go somewhere or you're feeling that kind of resistance, You don't want to kind of resist the resistance. One has to take a step back or get closer or something like that, but relate to it differently. You know, soften into it. Soften into the resistance to the resistance. You know, because you're a sophisticated yogi. We're not even just resistant, we're resistant to being resistant because we know we shouldn't be resistant, right? So the subtext is aversion. You know, the subtext is, I'll throw the dharma at it, or I'll throw some, you know, strategy, or something prescriptive at it as a way to get it to go away. And it doesn't work that way. There has to be more of an innocence, and an openness, and a willingness to experience. You know, and in the experiencing, I mean, we don't want to experience it because we think, if I experience this, it's going to be in the next 3 hours, or it's going to be 10 years, or maybe this is the one thing that's permanent. But which we, you know, of course, need to challenge. But if we 100% experience, that's what unlocks. That's what shifts. That's what changes. That's what allows things to move and not get stuck. You know, because we're holding it. We're grasping. We're clinging in our efforts to get it to go away. And so if we can relax that, and just experience it as it is. It's whatever way it is. You know, it's not in the realm of time, but we get caught in this realm of time. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's okay. You're next, though. Yeah.
I loved your description of the metta as kind of homeopathic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And is that kind of what you were just talking about? Could you explain more what you mean by that? Because it seems like just a little bit.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yes. I mean, just this idea of defensive metta, it's something that, like, you're throwing a concrete wall at it or a concrete door at it, rather than you just need a little drop. You know, a drop, and then trust that it's going to do its thing. You know, let go of the control. Defensive metta is all caught up with the effort to control, and doesn't ever work. But that's one of our big Dharma understandings. One of our big Dharma lessons is we have to surrender. Yes, yes. Yes, yes, that can be so skillful, yes. Mm-hmm. Because generally, you know, oftentimes anyway, one feels better about one's benefactor than oneself. So you kind of warm up on the benefactor, and then you move to yourself. But it's not that way. It's usually 50-50 in any group. You know, 50% better to start with yourself and then move to the benefactor. Yeah, and then the other 50%, better to start with the benefactor and move to yourself. So I do it in different ways because of the 50% rule. This is based on decades of teaching, 50%. Daniel, yeah?
I just have a sort of a report from the field during lunch. I decided to take the train up to the International District, and on the platform I was practicing with the five recollections. But I'll just take this for a spin. And I got on the train.
That's great.
I thought, you know what? Everybody's here. I'll just turn it into we.
Yes.
And
right.
I felt like that ramped it up to another level of experience. It's one thing to practice in a room full of sincere practitioners.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Be held
yeah,
in that
yeah.
way or do it.
Yes.
As part of a private practice at home.
Yes, yes.
But it seems wonderfully suited to urban practice.
Yes, very much so.
At a sporting event, walking down the street.
Yes.
You're out at a live music show. On the train. It just felt like there was a real poignancy to it.
Yeah.
And half the people were looking into their phones.
Right.
Probably reading the five recollections.
Of course. Of course. It was in their notes.
It also just seemed like the whole experience of being on the train, it was a sort of very intensely alive and compassionate experience. Mm-hmm. That sort of judgment that I have with devices.
Oh, yeah.
Public spaces was really quiet.
Boy, interesting, and, interesting.
I saw people doing what they normally do, but I just thought, oh, this is happening to all of us.
Yeah.
We're subject to it, whether we're aware of it now or not.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I'm not aware of it either.
Right, right.
So it's.
Oh.
I highly recommend doing it on the
I love that. I mean, the compassion kicked in. And I just really love what you said about taking it for a spin. You know, that's what we need to do, is take all of these things for a spin. And just the recognition, especially in bigger groups. And, you know, so interesting, the judging of the devices, because that's kind of, like, either you're misusing your device and somebody's judging you, or you're judging somebody else. Yeah, it is that way, because everybody has them. So do you not? Yeah, you do. You
I
must.
Do,
yeah.
I don't even need a device to do whatever it is that people do on their devices. We do this constantly anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Facebook,
exactly.
Facebook.
Right, right, right. Yes, yes. Yeah. But you're speaking about some of the fruit of this, you know, which is the compassion and the sense of connection. And less judgment and more poignancy and more sense of gratitude being on a train when nobody's talking to you. And, you know, but there's just that gratitude. Yeah, thank you. So it's 10 after, and I was going to end at 4 to sign some books. So let's sit for a moment together. Relaxing into the here and now. Include yourself, include everybody in this room, include the train that Daniel was on. Your heart is big enough to include it all, your magnanimous heart, this heart of immeasurable generosity, buoyancy, spaciousness, love. May all beings rest within themselves. May all beings be relaxed with one another. May all beings know real metta. Ask for hands who won't be here tomorrow. Okay. All right, so I think I will say this. I was going to say it tomorrow at the end of the day, but I think I might because there's enough hands to say this. I spoke yesterday about how the publisher of this book, and I have to say it's really impossible to say my. I mean, it's like, who wrote it, you know? But anyway. The publisher of this book is Wisdom Publications. And it's so great because instead of saying Simon & Schuster and all of this, I can say Wisdom, you know, suggested me that I do this or that. So I'm really getting a kick out of that. But I'm understanding what it takes to give a book a life. And Wisdom is suggesting that I ask my loved ones to post reviews on Amazon. If you've read the book, if you've appreciated it and you want other people to read it, I and Wisdom would be deeply appreciative. We're one and the same.
Give it 5 stars.
Yeah, I mean, people have been telling me about, I don't know what they're called, logarithms or algorithms, algorithms, yeah, some rhythms, some rhythms, yeah, so anyway, thank you. So I will see most of you tomorrow, which is great. Come back for joy and liberation. I mean, there was joy and liberation today, yeah, and I will be over there at some table if you wanted me to inscribe any of your books. I'll hang around. And just have a safe journey home and keep practicing. You know, keep practicing. Don't just leave the building and then it's all over. Keep it up. Yeah. Non-defensive metta. Okay? Throughout the day. All right. Thank you so much. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Nora.